This is TWiT.
If you stayed up late on ordering day, or if you wake up early this Friday, you might have the chance to get your hands on the new iPhones and the Apple Watches. But if you are Renee Ritchie, then you've been using them already. You've been using them for so long, you're already getting tired of them. Welcome back to the show, Renee.
Hi, thank you for having me back.
I was just kidding. You're not tired of the phones and the watch yet, are you?
No, you can never get tired. They're so pretty and so gold.
So you got both golds?
All gold, all the gold.
All gold. Okay, so there's a lot about the 10S and the that's similar to the 10. Let's start with what's different.
So, I mean, there's a gold finish, which if you're superficial like me, is just, a better. Anything gold is the only acceptable color. Also, the big deal, though, is the processor, the A12 Bionic. It has the same name as last year because Apple is still focusing on the things like the neural engine, but it is so much faster. They had a dual-core neural block last year. Now they have an 8-core neural engine, and it's just capable of doing a whole bunch of really smart things, including deciding what it should hand off to the GPU and to the CPU.
And so what are your thoughts on the new portrait mode features? I know those are new, and I think I have a link in there, Josh, to Renee's Instagram selfies that show it off. What are your thoughts on it?
I mean, that stuff is neat. That's sort of like a demonstration of the computational future where you're using bits to overcome the limitation of atoms. Phone cameras are just, they don't have any Z index, so they can't give you the benefits of big glass, but we're using artificial intelligence to sort of overcome physics. And in this case, right now you can do it in post, but eventually, like soon, I think the fall update, you'll be able to do it live where you can go from F1.4 all the way to F16 just by sliding across the little bar at the bottom.
What about picture quality? So, I mean, obviously now on premium smartphones, obviously the iPhones fall into that category. Pictures is like one of the most important things to so many people. How does it compare to last year's 10? And then how does it compare to another powerhouse in this regard, the Pixel 2 camera? What do you think?
I mean, I used to joke and say that Nokia had big glass, Apple had a really good ISP, and Google would just suck everything up to the cloud and make it look awesome. Uh-huh. And we're still seeing different approaches. Like Huawei is already throwing three cameras at it. Yeah. Google's using one really good camera, but they're using a ton of their server-based AI on it. Apple is a little bit in the middle. They're using two cameras, so you get the benefit of something like optical zoom, and you get real depth data because you don't just want to use cameras for portrait modes. Developers are doing all sorts of really clever things with depth data from cameras, including really advanced AR stuff. So I think you really want to give them that. I think it's better right now to have two physical cameras. It's better than the iPhone 10 in that it's better at low light. It's got a new sensor. It's got wider pixels, deeper pixels. And because of the AI engine, it's able to do a lot more. It's able to understand what you're shooting and sort of process it in a way where the compression algorithms don't get in the way of the textures, and where it can do what Apple's calling smart HDR, which is where it takes... It's doing a buffer of four frames, two regular frames, two overexposed frames to get details in the shadows. And then when you hit the button, it's doing a long exposure to bring details out of the highlights too. So it's very similar to Google's approach, but instead of being cloud-based, it's based on the device. People, a lot of this is going to be subjective. I find Google's color calibration a little bit cold. Other people find Apple's a little bit warm. I guess it depends if you're shooting Canon or Nikon in your previous life. But we're blessed to have so many really good camera phones now.
Absolutely.
Renee says Google leaves them a little cold. That's what I heard.
That could be
no,
a title.
It's just, I'm used to shooting with a Canon, and Apple looks closer to my Fast 50 than the Pixel does. Pixel looks wonderful. It just looks a little bit cooler than what I'm used to. Yeah, yeah.
So you have a Pixel that you use too?
Yeah, I have a Pixel 2 XL, and I'll get the Pixel 3. I feel like with all the leaks, I'm the only one who doesn't have one. As soon as they go up for order, I'm going to get one right away.
You probably could have bought one for like $2,000. I think they were selling on the black market. You could have one now, too.
So when you're sitting at home, when do you reach for the Pixel 2? Like, what is it that that your many iPhones don't do that you need to reach for the Pixel?
I mean, I use it just to test. I always want, ever since the Nexus came out, I always want to make sure I have the latest Google phone just so that I can compare with it. I don't do a lot with it because I don't like to be signed into Google services. And if you don't, for example, give it permission to look at your app and your web usage, it just doesn't let you use Assistant. And I'm like, I just want to open up the weather app. It's like, nope, nothing for you. So, you know, it's a contentious relationship, but I do, like, I use it for photos and I use it for gaming sometimes. And I use it for Chrome and I just want to make sure I'm at least keeping up to date on it.
When you were talking about the A12, the Bionic chip update, and of course, this is the 7-nanometer process.
Yes.
On this phone, which is a really big deal. Where do those improvements surface most for you on a day-to-day usage scale or experience when you're interacting with a phone? Where do you notice those improvements most?
So 7-nanometer, it should be clear that a lot of this is marketing terms now. Like different vendors have different processes that they call by different sizes. But I think Taiwan Semiconductor really has a very good process now where they can fit an awesome amount onto a very small area. So you have much more processing capacity in a much smaller space, and that increases efficiency. And once, you know, it's the same thing for processors as it is for race cars. The more efficient you can be, the faster you can be, because the enemy here is heat, and it keeps the heat down. So on a daily basis, you can do more things before the phone gets hot, before it gets stuttery, before it has to throttle down, before it has to ramp down, and it can do many more things now. So I always judge it based on, can I do things now that I couldn't do before? And using photography again for an example, I can get usable photos under worse conditions than I could previously. So it's more like I can get photos I never could before. I can play longer than I could before without noticing any lag. It's all those sort of small quality of life improvements.
Sure.
So I am going to pick up an X10. I called it an X. A 10.
It's Apple's fault. It's not your fault.
Yeah, no,
it's
that's why I spell out the word 10.
I know.
That's the only way I'm going to not do that.
So the 10S Max, I felt like that's the one that I needed. But then it's not arriving, they think, until the 24th. And Josh is going to go tomorrow morning to wait in line at a store where he thinks he's going to be able to buy one for himself, and his wife will be able to buy one. And he thinks that he's going to buy me one as well. And I'm going to pay him back, obviously. But now which one? Now I'm thinking maybe I should get the smaller one. Like I had the 6S Plus, I had the 7 Plus, I had the 8 Plus, but I did like the smaller, but I feel like I have to get the most expensive thing of everything, and that's probably because Leo's paying, but what do you think I need?
I think if Leo's paying, you should get 3.
Okay. No, yeah, give me one.
The screen is so much bigger. Like, it fills the entire size of an iPhone 6 Plus or 7 Plus or 8 Plus that you're used to. And that's just a massive display. So I think it's for people who really, like, for example, I woke up one day and I just couldn't see my iPhone with my glasses on anymore. Mm-hmm. And they have display zoom back. So if you want bigger text, bigger buttons, easier to hit, or if you just want more surface area because you want to watch all your movies or read all your books or play all your games on your iPhone, I like to joke that the iPhone 10S Max is kind of like the iPhone 10 had a baby with an iPad mini. It really is like a tiny tablet at that screen size. And if that appeals to you, then you want it. But if you do prefer the smaller phone, if you want to do more things one-handed, if you need it to fit into smaller pockets or bags or anything like that, you still have a really big screen now on the iPhone 10S. Sorry, it's going to take a while for me to get used to that too.
I think I need both. I think I'm going to tell him that you said I needed both, Renee. Well,
comparison, right? You got to serve the viewers.
Yeah, it's true. It's true.
Yeah. So is there anything missing from these two new phones?
From the phone point, I mean, it's still very opinionatedly Apple, and things like faster charging in the box. There's still a 5-watt charger in the box. And I know scientists will tell me slow and cold is the best way to charge a phone, and I'll eke 3 days extra battery health out of it after 5 years, but it's just not convenient. And they took away the 3.5-millimeter headphone adapter because it's been a couple of years, but we still don't have USB-C, and that's been a couple of years as well. And it's a company that can spend millions of dollars making the perfect camphored edge on a phone or the perfect lacquered finish, just won't put the adapters in the box, and that never ceases to fail annoying me.
So are you ready to move on to the watch?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay, you also have the watch, and you said it's the most important product that Apple's ever made. Oh, it's so pretty.
It's so big. Yeah, no, I really feel that way because there's tons of technology. And, you know, I say that the Apple Watch saves lives, and people say the phone saves lives, computers save lives, helicopters, defibrillators, all those things save lives. And they absolutely do. But the watch has the advantage of always being connected to you. It's persistent and it has those sensors. So you don't always have your phone in your hand. And that could be as simple as like you're in an accident or you fall off your bicycle while you're riding in the park alone or the mountain alone. All of those things where the phone might go flying. The watch is still on your wrist. At night, you put it down on your table, or you put it down on your desk at work and you walk around and it's just not connected to you. Where Apple Watch has over and over again, which is the definition of modern science, over and over again, found things like high heart rates, and now it can do low heart rates, and soon it's going to do irregular heart rates, and soon it's going to do ECG as well. And I think when you have that sort of benefit on you, it literally becomes a life-saving device.
So you're a professional. You do this for a living. Did you fall? And if so, how did it do?
So I fell, but I did judo for a lot of years, and I do break falls. And I was told that one of the key things about detecting falls is the movement of your arms. So they're supposed to go like, wah, if you're falling backwards, or wah, if you're falling forwards. And I keep mine like this so I can break fall. And so I totally screwed up the process. But I only found that out after I'd done it twice on concrete. So I was not tempted to run back out and do it again.
Are you okay?
Yeah. It was okay. Mostly the rain. I just got soaking wet after doing it twice. And then I was like, that's enough.
Do you have access to a trampoline?
Yeah, I'm interested, though, because it's measuring the rapid deceleration of a body hitting something hard. I think a trampoline will do some sort of inertial dampening. Yeah. Mm. But we can. It's going to be fun to test.
Well, it's a huge bummer because on Monday of this week, I fell on my hand. I don't know if you can see it. And it's all swelled up. You can sort of see how swelled up it is. I fell, I was running, and like on my fingers, and you're reminded at how, and my shoulder, my head, you're reminded it as how, like, that's a shocking specific movement to fall like head over heels on the ground. You feel it. And it would be very hard to, I think, fake that in any way.
Which makes me wonder how they tested it and got it to the point that they did. If it had to be a true, like, actual fall in order to
track
it.
I don't want to say it was on the air power team, Jason, but it might have been on the air power team.
Do you know what the air power is?
No, I'm just going to laugh, though.
The air power was the thing that they announced but then never came out, that you can put your watch and your phone.
From last year. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And then it was so long ago, I forgot that it actually had a name.
No, but so. I'm going to buy. I had a couple relatives, elderly relatives, who fell, and that was basically the end for them, the decline. They just never recovered after falling. And they lived alone, took a while for someone to find them, then they were hospitalized, and it just got wet. And if there's even me or friends of mine who go mountain biking alone, just the piece of, like, maybe it won't work every time, but 80%, 70%, those odds to me are so worth getting a piece of technology and slapping on your wrist that it is absolutely going to be the Christmas gift I give out this year.
Yeah. And you know, a lot of people have been saying, well, now it's going to call 911 all the time. And Adam Engst was on MacBreak Weekly. I got to fill in for you, Renee, this week.
Oh.
And he made a good point, which is true, because he had just fallen also on his bike. And he made the good point is, as an adult, when you fall and you actually can get up, that's the first thing you do. Like, you just get up, you look around, and someone see me, like, I'm fine, even if you're, like, in total pain. So, like, that is the natural response when you fall down. If you can get up, you do immediately. You don't just lie there. Your instincts are to get up, I think.
And it's a minute. I mean, you've got to really want to get, you've got to really be hurt to stay there for a minute.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Exactly. So, I think, I like the idea. Now, how often do you use the cellular? Do you have the cellular now?
I do. And I got a cellular series for there. I use it, but this is a long story. Rogers, the carrier that I use, never implemented the kind of networking you needed for Apple Watch. They're doing it this year finally. So I had to use a different carrier to use my Apple Watch, and I didn't get as good service at home. So I would switch back and forth, pairing it to different phones. I only ever had it half the time. As soon as that goes live, I think it's going live tomorrow, I'm going to just have it on all the time. And I love the idea that, you know, it cannot replace your phone, but you can do a lot of brief, important things with it. I could go out shopping now at this point with Apple Pay and with cellular and with all of these services. And I did use walkie-talkie when I was out at Pokemon Go Fest. Just press the button. Hey, where are you? Oh, down by the stand. Okay, I'll be right there. And it's a weird feeling. It's like push to talk on the old Nextel phones. Yeah. But for some things, it just feels like a more convenient way to do it.
Would you say this is enough of an upgrade from the 3 to make the jump if someone has the 3? What do you think?
Normally, I would not. Like, it is a redesign, and some people just love redesigns. But by the core feature set, you're getting so much with the watchOS 5 update that you don't need to run out to get it. But because it is such a health-focused device, if the ECG, if you're in the U.S. especially, and the ECG appeals to you, if the fall detection appeals to you because that's unique to Series 4. So if you have any condition where you think this would be either safe or potentially life-saving, then I would say it's worth a couple $100 to do it.
So what's missing on the Apple Watch?
Always on time. It is still a watch that fails most of the time at being a watch. And I can't believe 5 years. I understand battery is expensive. You know, you pay for everything in mobile with battery life. But I would be willing to give up on something else to have a little bit of always on time. Also, sleep tracking. I know you can get apps for that. But I always like there to be a baseline of Apple service because then it starts to permeate the mainstream culture. And I think sleep tracking is hugely important. And then it's just, you know, it's just a matter of time. We'll get more and more features until we'll be pulling it over our hand like Tony Stark and blasting people.
Well, Renee, thank you so much for joining us. Renee Ritchie is the host of Vector at iMore, MacBreak Weekly here at Twit, and Nihi is Renee Ritchie on Twitter and Instagram, where you can see all the links and all the pictures that he's taken and all of his reviews of these products. Thanks so much for coming on.
Thank you, Renee.
Thank you so much for having me.
Take care.
We'll talk to you soon.